Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
How can advertising on TikTok help jumpstart sales for your small business?
Thanks to TikTok ads, I was able to open up a business with my childhood friend, get a warehouse, and even hire employees. My name is Julian, and I am one of the founders of The Snacks Lab. We are an exotic snack company. We had over $100,000 in sales from our TikTok ads in the first month. So our orders went from 5 a day to over 250 orders a day. You definitely have to use TikTok ads, and you gotta start now.
Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. Glad to have you with us here on Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Gester. Tommy, I was scrolling. Social media there during the break, and it's the anniversary of one of my favorite days ever on the show. The day that you had a little procedure.
It's been a year. Wow.
A year, I guess. You get served the memories. It's been a year. And it was just great. It was great fun on the show that day. We had Earl, from the top rope delivering one of the great calls of all time. And, that was a fun day.
You know, it, now that I'm a year removed from the little snip that I had done, I have to say, like, my life really hasn't changed a whole lot. And that's okay. I mean, look, like, the pain was temporary, but you move forward, you get it done. It wasn't pleasant, but it wasn't the worst thing ever either. And but yeah, life goes on.
Yeah. That's good. We don't need to go down that road completely. Can it be? That'd be weird, but it's a great show. That was a fun day. Welcome back in, everybody. Another hour of Sports Daily here. It is Albrock and Caster. Max Powers producing for us. Max is locked into the NHL playoffs right now. Max and I's teams did not play last night. So, you know, as far as the bet that Max has me on for hockey, it was an off night, which is for Winnipeg and Toronto to meet in the finals. And if they do, I'll get to get a new golf driver because I put a little scratch on Max's picks. Last night, I know you had the Capitals beat the Hurricanes. We'll get some Hurricanes fans listening to the show. And the Oilers beat the Golden Knights. So that was happening. In the NBA, Steph Curry is not rushing a return from what he calls a tricky hamstring injury. I mean, look, they're not going to get it done in that series without Steph Curry. The Timberwolves win kind of no problem. They might be able to win a game, I think, in the series without Steph. They're not winning the series, though, without Steph. And so, you know, that's out there, too, as the T-Wolves get that one done. That was the only NBA game last night, but Minnesota sort of had to have it.
I can't imagine that they can't, that Steve Kerr cannot draw up a way to get Steph Curry involved in a game that doesn't involve him running up and down the court multiple times, you know, like post him up in the corner and just let him shoot.
Yeah. I mean, you could probably draw up some like inbound stuff, but at some point you got to get down to the other end. So maybe in spots, maybe you keep him available to come. But then at that point, if you do that, like in potentially the biggest spot of the game, you're having him come in cold. It's a tough spot for the Warriors.
Has that ever impacted Steph Curry though?
No, I mean
if you're coming in cold or not, it doesn't really matter. If anybody can do that, he can't.
Sleep laying down. I get it, but it's not ideal. It's not ideal for the Warriors. I don't know that I thought they were going to win that series anyway, but that's a tough blow. I hope that he can come back because I am so intrigued by that series, the style differences, the age differences, right? Like I think there is a bit of a passing of the torch right now to Anthony Edwards as potentially that next dude, best player in the league. Is he the next kind of banner carrier? Could be. And, you know, he's got to kind of go through Steph and this, you know, in the old guard, the last dynasty to get it done. I think this is an intriguing, but if Steph is out, then, you know, whatever. I'm sure, you know, Timberwolves fans are like, yeah, they don't need to see him play anymore. That'd be great. Tonight it's Cavs Pacers. The Cavs back up against the wall. Probably a little bit surprising to a lot of people that they're down 0-2 going on the road to Indiana, the 2-1 seed. Or, well, shouldn't say the 2-1 seeds, the 1 and 2 seeds kind of facing the same thing. And then the Thunder. Now they got to go to Denver and follow it up, Tommy. And the Thunder bounce back in a big way. Honestly, I doubt Denver cares too much about Game 2. They're not worried about Game 2. Game 3 feels pretty big for Oklahoma City to me.
If you're Denver, how much of the film from Game 2 do you watch?
None.
Do you just throw it away, just burn it and be like, look, that was an aberration. We're not even going to go back and look through it. Or, I mean, are there things that you can try to take away from that if you're Denver to make sure that same sort of thing doesn't happen again in Game 3?
I think you literally just don't pretend it didn't happen. I mean, they were so clearly happy to get out of there with the split, right? I think the better... Well, not better. I think the real question is Oklahoma City that much better than Denver? And Oklahoma City, I guess by the same token, how much of Game 1 do you watch if you're Oklahoma City, right? Probably more, I think.
I think if you're Oklahoma City, you watch more Game 1 than Denver watches of Game 2.
Yeah, I think so. But they almost won Game 1, too. I think Oklahoma City's okay in that series. They probably should have won Game 1, and then they do that in Game 2. That is something that washes away the sting of, you know, not winning your games at home. But you do have to take it on the road against a team who won a title a couple years ago, who has the best player in the world in Nikola Jokic, and you got to go get it done at their place now. And for a young Oklahoma City team, that's probably going to be a tall order. I think Knicks Celtics is, I think, is rightfully the series we've all kind of like emotionally invested in if you're not like a specific fan of a team. Oklahoma City Denver to me is probably the next most intriguing as far as like what's going to happen here in this series. Pacers and Cavs, no offense to Cleveland and Indiana. And it's just like, okay. I mean, I like the, I've always liked the Pacers. I hope they do well. But this Oklahoma City Denver series is kind of the one for me.
Well, and don't you feel like, and I might be alone on this, but the winner of Oklahoma City, Denver, that series, I think will probably end up in the NBA Finals. And that's not taking anything away from Minnesota because, again, Anthony Edwards is outstanding. And I think that he is that next guy for sure, like the it guy in the NBA. But I don't know. I mean, I like either OKC or Denver to be that representative from the West, regardless of who wins that series.
Yeah, I probably don't agree with that. I think Minnesota is really good. And I think if Golden State's healthy, I think they're capable too. So we'll see. Maybe if Steph Curry's out, but I'm probably a little higher on Minnesota than that. We got to take a minute here for the brilliance of X yesterday. Didn't yesterday on X feel like this is a total pivot, by the way, but I wanted to get this in and maybe we talk about it next. I don't know. The jokes yesterday, like that felt old school. That felt like old school X Twitter of a decade ago. I've long said like I consume that app the most because it used to be like the haven for real smart alecks for humor. And it's always been like where the sports news happens. So it's always been, but man, like that was the best of social media to me. Like just like great jokes all around. We're all having fun with one of the great world events that's happened in a while. We're all having fun together. And then you get that it's an American from Chicago that's a sports fan that's like oh man, it just was never, it was nonstop yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, all of the debates on social media yesterday about whether or not the new Pope is a Cubs fan or a White Sox fan. Cubs and then fan. They talk like they no White Sox fan. Did you not catch that? He's a White
no,
Sox
fan. No, I saw
fan.
Cubs fan every
no, 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 no. He is a White Sox fan. So one of the local Chicago TV stations interviewed the Pope's brother who said that no, we grew up White Sox fans. Apparently their mother was a Cubs fan, but the kids grew up as White Sox fans. And so White Sox Nation has just absolutely embraced him with all of that. So, and you know what? Look, like the White Sox are really bad. So they need something positive to hang their hats on.
For him. That's right.
If you exactly like, can we have the Pope start blessing this team a little bit? Because clearly it's not working out well for him.
Listen, I'm Catholic, so don't nobody think I'm like taking shots, but like the jokes are great. Like my favorite of the day, well, the Bulls intro to the like overlay.
That was pretty good,
man. That was good. But the picture of him with God bless everyone in the world except Green Bay is probably my favorite. That's
that was
my
that was good. Yeah. I like the one where, you know, somebody posted a picture of Mike Ditka and said, you know, look, like if there was going to be a Pope that was from Chicago, it needed to be this guy.
We all thought it'd be Ditka.
Yeah, for sure. But, you know,
congratulations to all our great Catholic listeners out there. It's a big day in American Pope. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. I did not expect that. I got to tell you, like I did not expect that. I mean, we've covered this, you know, on the news side now for a couple weeks, and I don't think anybody saw that coming. Right. It's cool. Like as an American Catholic, like it's like, I honestly never thought it, I thought it might not ever happen, to be honest with you. And it's right now, and it didn't take them very long. So there must be some good agreement there on this.
How many Packers fans do you think are in the process of converting to Protestantism?
Yeah. They're just like, you know what? We can't
get behind it. We
can't do that.
We're deconverting from Catholicism from it.
Yeah. What a great day for jokes. What a great day for, like my mom used to call it, good, clean fun. You know, what a great day for good, clean fun, right? No,
the best one though was that it was all over social, but you know how Chicago got a Pope before they got a 4,000-yard passer. That one was pretty good too.
Days to elect a Pope, 2 days to draft Shedeur Sanders, 3. Like there, yeah,
right,
there,
yeah.
It was there was just like a constant gold mine all day long. My favorite of the process, there was a tire fire or something in Tuscaloosa. And a news outlet had sent that out, and this was the day before yesterday, and so it's black smoke in Tuscaloosa, and somebody, you know, reposts that or whatever, and it's just like black smoke. Alabama still doesn't have a starting quarterback named. Like it's just like,
I love it.
This is so good. I love it. Great jokes. Congrats, Pope Leo, and to the American Catholics out there listening to the show. It's a big day. We'll come back. More Sports Daily coming your way right after this.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is Sports Daily. We're glad to be with you on this Friday, getting you ready for the weekend, a big weekend, Mother's Day weekend. Glad to have it. Glad to have all these moms in our lives. Tommy, let's go back to the Royals here for those just jumping in. By the way, you can leave your comments with us on the show through our video stream. It's easy to do there. That's available to you on Facebook, on YouTube, on X. You can leave us your voice messages through the Odyssey app. Glad to have that available to you. Or you can call us the good old fashioned way, 869-1240. The Royals are right now, Tommy, if you look across baseball, they are in the mix to be one of the best teams, and they're still 2.5 games back in the division. Cleveland, Detroit, right there. By winning percentage, three of the four best teams in the American League right now reside in the AL Central. Seattle is the other in there. If you go over to the National League, a little bit different. There's a bunch of really good teams in the National League and a bunch of really bad teams in the National League. The American League, though, is even like we kind of thought it would be. Three out of the four best teams, though, are in the Central at the moment. We have to factor in and think about like which teams are going to make moves, which teams are going to trade, what's going to, you know, come of all this. What do you think the likelihood is that holds up, right? We know the Yankees look like they're going to be really, really good. Is the Central, I think we all agree the Central's good. Is it that good? Or is there a little mirage there, you think?
No, I think it's that good. I think it's going to be a three-horse race down the stretch. And I'm not a big believer. I know you are probably more than me, of the Twins being able to get back into contention. I just don't see it with them this year. I think that they're probably a 500 team, would probably be where I would put them at. But from the perspective of the teams in front of the Royals, the Tigers look like they are for real with their pitching and what they've got. You know, I know we talked a lot about the Royals pitching. Tigers pitching is right there too. And they're pretty complete. They've got a great manager in AJ Hinch who can win a ton of games. And then, you know, Cleveland is Cleveland. They're always there. A lot of times it's not like they've got major massive stars on their roster, but they can get it done as well. And so, no, I do think that we're going to see a pretty stiff piece of competition from the two teams in front of the Royals in that division. I do think that holds up.
Yeah, I do too. Cause if you look what teams have I think we all think Detroit's, well, we don't all probably think Detroit's for real, but Detroit's again, like they got the best run differential in all of baseball right now. I don't know what else they need to show us. And they kind of beat up on Kansas City a little bit too in round one. But what team is going to, you know, fly up into that stratosphere that's not already there? I would still say Texas, because I think their offense at some point will come. And I think it's starting to a little bit, but they've had a really slow start. Seattle is for real. Their pitching's really good. I don't know if I think Houston's going to get there. This is kind of their rebuild year. Minnesota will be better, but I don't think they'll get to that stratosphere. The Yankees are already there. We talked about the Orioles. They're the other team I think you'd expect to, but man, they're so far back now. I don't know if it's going to come for them this year. Tampa's not going to like make additions. Maybe Toronto, but they haven't been very good. The American League feels pretty average this year, I think, is the point of all of this for me. Like, you go to the National League, the Mets are very good. Philadelphia is very good. I think Atlanta has a chance to be. I don't know if I think Chicago's very good yet, but they're playing really well right now. The Dodgers, the Padres, probably the Giants are all very good teams. Maybe even Arizona, who remember added Corbin Burns. Like, there's all these really good teams in the National League. And I think you pointed this out before the year. And then in the American League, it feels like there's four or five, like, really good teams. And I think that's good news for the Royals.
I think it is too. But when, you know, three of those teams are in your same division,
that,
I
mean, sucks. But it's not spread out amongst all three of them. That doesn't hold you out of the playoffs anymore, though. So, you know, I think
it doesn't hold you out of the playoffs, but it could certainly be the difference maker between getting a first round bye and playing in a wild card series.
Yeah. What do you think, by the way? You always want to buy when you can get a buy. Man, if you gave me the choice, though, of getting a bye or winning a wild card series, I'd take winning a wild card series. Obviously, there is the chance you lose the wild card series, but I don't like that much. I think playing there, and they've done a good job of shrinking it down where it's less of an impact and you don't get to set your starters. So maybe now it's not even – there was a time, though, where I think the bye hurt you a little bit. And I think they've done a pretty good job with the shaping of things. I don't know how much of an advantage it is anymore. And honestly, if you're the Royals and you're five deep, we talked about, it's funny you said that, because TJ Cleland and I were talking about this yesterday. Like, who's your game one starter right now in a playoff series? Is it just kind of by default Reagan still?
I think it's Reagan. It's
as
Reagan's.
You're watching carve people up, yeah, every start.
If the postseason started today, you're starting Cole Reagan's in
you
game
are.
One.
I agree. And I think, but how much of a difference is there between Reagan's and the rest? And this is a good thing. I'm not saying that as like a deterrent to Reagan's. Like,
it's a lot more balanced from top to bottom in that rotation, at least as of right now, than what we saw last year. I mean, you knew that it was Reagan's, you knew that it was Lugo. And then from there, it was kind of a toss up a little bit. I mean, you know, yeah, you had Brady Singer that, you know, would do some really good things for you. Alec Marsh was there. He was either really good or really bad. It wasn't until late in the year that they had Lorenzen, and then Michael Wacha was, you know, kind of your middle of the rotation type guy. It's a lot more of a balanced top to bottom rotation than what we saw a year ago.
Well, and it was really good a year ago. I think it's top heavier. We'll see. We got to get them up against some.
Wait,
good offenses.
You think the rotation is top heavier this year than it was a year ago?
I think it's as balanced, but I think it's better right now. Right. Sure, you know what I mean? Like it's as balanced, but like it's like the top end of it. Not
because I feel like it was top heavy a year ago.
Yeah, that's
Reagans and Lugo were fantastic.
I said that. Yeah, I said that wrong. It's like they're all toward the top. Right. Like so it's not as like these guys are incredible and then these guys are serviceable. It's like all of these guys kind of shifted toward the top. Would make it heavier, but then that doesn't make sense. Anyway, yes, I agree. Like it's a better rotation right now than it was a year ago, which is just so incredible because it was so good a year ago. And that's one of the things that we'll watch as they play better teams, as they play better offenses. Getting seven of the games in that stretch against the White Sox and Rockies is going to help your starting pitching. Playing the Rays in that stretch is going to help your starting pitching. That doesn't mean they're not awesome. They don't have a chance to be the best rotation in baseball, because I thought they did have a chance to be the best pitching staff in the American League before the season started top to bottom. It just means, can you expect to allow 30 runs in 16 games when you're playing playoff caliber teams? No, I don't think so. Like, I think it's not going to stay where it is now, but it can still be the best in baseball. And so we'll find out, you know, as time goes on. I think one of the interesting things to watch will be like, how does it stack up as they start to play really good teams, right? Can, you know, is Lorenzen as effective as Bubich against a really good lineup? Because I think that's going to tell us a little bit more about, you know, how that would potentially stack up later in the year. How do these guys navigate dominant offenses, which they haven't been playing lately, and that's fine. But when they do, like, which of these guys are most equipped to take that on? We know Reagans is because he strikes everybody out, right? We've seen enough from Lugo over the years to know he's fine. So now it's like Lorenzen, Bubich, maybe a little bit of Wacha. Like, which of these guys? That's how I think you have to look at it a little bit. I mean, it's going to be Reagans if he's healthy in the end because he's got the best stuff.
Yeah, and when you're playing, you know, these divisional opponents that are ahead of you in the standings, I mean, every single one of those games will have the feel of a postseason baseball game. And so when you, whether you're trotting out there Cole Reagans at the top of your rotation, or maybe your fourth or fifth guy in Lorenzen or Bubich or whoever, it's got the feel of a late season or postseason type ball game because you're chasing other playoff potential teams ahead of you in that division. And so I think that knowing that, as at least as of right now, you've got a rotation that you feel comfortable and confident in any one of those five guys, I mean, that's got to help. And we talked about it earlier in the show, help the Royals feel like there's never going to be a game that we do not have the capability to win just solely based on our starting pitching. And again, like, you can easily, and I do this all the time, like with teams that I follow, I look at probable starters when, like, you're getting ready to go into a new series, right? And you're like looking at the matchups and, okay, so the Royals are going to have this guy, and this guy in the next three game set. What's the likelihood that they're going to get this one, or this one based on the probable starting pitching? And there was a year ago, I'll be honest with you, you saw like Alec Marsh pop up there. You're like, okay, that could go either way. Like they could either, you know, shut out their opponent, or they could get shut out by their opponent based on Alec Marsh starting that game. Or, you know, there were times when Brady Singer wasn't overly effective. There were times that Michael Wacha wasn't overly effective last season. Now you look at it, and I know that, like, Saturday's game, for example, and you mentioned this last hour, that you've got Reagans and Crochet, and that's a heavyweight matchup between two great pitchers. So again, like, that could go either way. But by and large, when you're looking at pitching matchups and things like that, there shouldn't be any game moving forward that you look at and you're like, yeah, that one's going to be way too difficult for the Royals to get anything done in.
No matter who, I man,
no matter who the pitcher is.
I completely agree on either side, right? Like, I don't care if it's Crochet against Lorenzen. Is Lorenzen the fifth starter? Probably. Doesn't matter. But that's where you're going to have to lean into the offense a little bit too. Like, you can't expect the Red Sox offense is good enough, I think, for this convert. Like, you can't expect Lorenzen to hold the Red Sox scoreless through six, right? That's not fair. And so that's where the offense has to be able to help you out. And so it's all full circle. Look, the fact that a month ago we were moderately concerned. It wasn't like danger or anything like that with the Royals. But I think they were playing a stretch where you're like, ugh. Like, we had concern. It was small, but it was there. Fast forward a month to now, you're having the conversations about how to position yourself and where do they position in the postseason. That's what happens with the kind of remarkable run through a 16-game stretch they just had. We do know it's a streaky team. We do know they're capable of it flipping around. They were that a year ago. I think the starting pitching and the bullpen even more is going to raise the floor and lessen the possibility that they can go on another one of those bad streaks. But if the offense does what it did when they did go through their bad streak, then that's going to happen no matter what the pitching does. They have to be able to score runs. I think yesterday was a good indicator of some. You ever hear the term positive regression? It's like this. It's this weird thing because you hear regression, but like regression basically can happen to the average, whether you're below or above. It's just getting to the average, right? So positive regression is you're regressing to a better place, whatever. That's, I think, what we're seeing a little bit out of the lineup. You're seeing a lot of positive regression out of a lot of these dudes. And so that's helping. Salvi's a year older though, right? What if Salvi's home run power just takes a step back as he gets older, right? We know he's hitting a ton of doubles and everything looks fine. I don't have any concern, but what if that power wanes a little bit? Vinny's never been a power guy. Bobby Witt Jr. is going to hit for power, but that's kind of it, right? That's it in this lineup. So as you look at it, how much do they need it? I think you can start to ask those questions. Well, they don't if everybody's at what they do on a normal basis, right? Because they're built to run, to advance runners, they're kind of a singles offense, and that's okay. Or do they need it? And I think it's fun to have, those kinds of conversations now. Like, is it good enough? Is it not good enough? This is what you get to do when you're watching a really good baseball team, even when it's in early May. And Royals fans deserve it. But those are the kinds of things we look for. Again, you get three against the Red Sox. You're going to face pretty good pitching in that series. And we'll test out the offense. They're at home. They scored 10 runs yesterday. Great. That's what you want to see, right? That's what you have to have when you're beating up on people. But I also don't want to glaze over the fact that they didn't score many runs in the other games of that series, right? 3, 4, and 2. They combined for, what does that make? 9 runs over 3 games against the White Sox. Let's watch it when they play some good pitching. Like,
yeah, and on the flip side, obviously it is the White Sox. They held the White Sox to 4 runs in 4 games, which, I mean, by the way, I don't know if you knew this, that sets a franchise record for the fewest number of runs allowed in a 4-game series against an opponent. Cool. That's a franchise record. So, when you're averaging 3 runs a game, 9 over 3 games, that's not a ton, but when you're only giving up an average of 1 a game, at that point, that doesn't matter. So, you're going to get better hitters. You're going to get a better lineup. You're going to be up against better pitching in this series this weekend. And so that's why I really like the fact that the finale of the series yesterday, again, the bats kind of came alive a little bit. We've seen that a few different times, right? Like the final game of a series that happened against Baltimore last weekend, the final game of the series, they came alive with the offense. That happened in the Colorado series. It was like the final game of that series. The bats came alive again there too. So they've got, they just need to carry that on to start off a series. And hopefully they do that tonight.
Well, and it's like everything's context, right? You go into a 4-game series, you score 19 runs. You're like, all right, that's about 5 runs a game. That's really good. That needs context. No, you scored a whole bunch in one game and not very many in the others. So, of course, you would rather have 5 runs every game than 3 2-1 runs and then 10, right? That's not, but that's why I like that. I'm ready for the schedule to turn over a little bit. The stretch was awesome. It was fun. May very well be the most fun stretch we have with them all year. I'm ready for the schedule to turn over a little bit because I want to see everybody get tested a little bit. I think that's important for this team to know as they have to make big decisions. I've said it since the beginning of the offseason. I think this is a year the Royals are going to be hyper-aggressive at the trade deadline. They were a year ago. I mean, they were aggressive in context last year. But to the point of the caller yesterday, how can it get better? To add some power to the lineup. Jesse chimes in real quick before we go to break. It'll be one of the best to watch if Cags is able to come up and produce like everyone is thinking he can. I agree with you, Jesse. I don't want to put that kind of expectation on him. I mean, he's 22 years old. There'll be growing pains there. They don't need him to come up and be the player he'll be 2 or 3 years from now. They just need, it'd be nice if he came up and provided them the power that they're lacking. They don't have a spot for him right now, though. And that's the conversation that's, if he keeps hitting and Vinny does not, it's going to be a weird and uncomfortable conversation that I hate having. So I want them to play Cags in the outfield because I don't want to have it. I don't want to have that conversation. Everybody loves Vinny Pasquantino too much. And I agree. I'm in that camp. But it's the only conversation you can have if it's the call and Cags doesn't play the outfield, unless he plays three times a week, which nobody wants either. So I'm just catching up on the what we were talking about earlier, the White Sox versus Cubs Pope drama, Tommy. Very fascinating. Cubs tried to claim it. Cubs tried to claim it. What kind of a great sports fan are you when your brother just becomes the Pope, right? One of the more historic days in the church ever, the American Pope, right? It's always historic. It goes back 2,000 years. You get the American Pope, you're Catholic, your brother has already been a cardinal. You're so proud of all the work he's done over his lifetime. You see the Cubs in that great moment of glory. All this is happening. The Cubs say, you know, hey, he's a Cubs fan. You got to be a next level sports fan to be. Hang on a minute. No, time out. No, he's not. Like, we got to sit. Like, I'm very proud of my brother, but I got to tell you right now, there's no way in hell we're taking, you know, for lack of a better term in these circumstances, we're not going to let this stand. He is not a kid. Like, that is awesome. That's so good. That's so great.
Well, and think about like just the 100+ years that the Cubs didn't win a World Series. Like, I'm sure that in their minds, they're probably like, hey, we needed some divine intervention. And so clearly the new Pope is a Cubs fan because he helped lead us to our first championship in over a century. But then, you know, the White Sox step in and look, let's be real. The White Sox more than the Cubs, maybe the White Sox more than any other team in Major League Baseball or in the entire sports kingdom, they need a W pretty bad. Yeah. And so this is as big of a W as you can get. So I don't blame the White Sox for wanting to take that away from the Cubs. Like, look, we've always been kind of the little brother. We don't usually get the kind of attention that the Cubs get and all of that. We're taking this. Like, we're claiming the Pope as one of ours.
Yep. I it's just like, I appreciate it so much. It's, And the White Sox part, like, of course, it's the brother that is cracking me up. Like, this moment for your fan, like, everything, to take the time out of the day, like, it just happened to make sure that everybody knows, like, hang on now. No. We love our sports here in America. Hopefully for the White Sox, right? There is a history of like popes in baseball. They've had, I was reading they've had some masses at baseball stadiums historically. My big question is, as you know, a Catholic and you know, a big fan of the last Pope, like, if you're Leo, do you predominantly like speak in English when you're, or do you speak in Latin, or do you go Italian?
He did like a opening prayer or something.
Yeah.
He didn't speak English for that.
Well, and that's because of, you know, where you are, right? You're in the Vatican and everybody there understands a certain language, but that is kind of remarkable. Like, you must now do this most important thing in another language.
And wasn't it's a guy his background grew up in America, South America? And
went to Peru. Yeah, Peru, like it's, yeah, yeah. It's not like if it's got to be Latin or Italian, that's ever been his dominant language. So that's really interesting. And you know, Pope Francis, I suppose, did the same thing because he was Argentinian, I believe. He's South American. I wondered that, but it'll be interesting to see it because if he's speaking English, like it'll be a lot easier to like lock in as Americans to like what's going on there. It's a cool day. Cool day. Great humor yesterday. Appreciate apparently, everybody contributing.
Apparently he also, he went to Villanova.
Yep. And Villanova's so, man, that's also
Villanova's in the news a lot. I mean, cause I mean, you look at the Knicks Celtics series right now, there's quite a bit of Villanova representation. And then you add the Pope in the mix as well.
I saw there was a great one yesterday, like Popes by conference, Big East one, everybody else zero. Like,
yeah, you want to talk about, you know, it just means more in the SEC. Well, the Pope didn't come from the SEC.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's just so much good stuff. Again, congratulations. What a crazy day that was in a good way. Just a fun, unexpected. I couldn't stop smiling at everything, all about it. Like the fact that it was American, everything was good. And then like everywhere you go, like it, that's, can we get back to that on social media? And I don't know as much about the others, but like, can we just get back to everybody having fun together? Like everybody was having fun together yesterday, whether you were Catholic, whether you weren't, it didn't matter whether you're a sport, like everybody was having fun together yesterday. Can we go back to that? That was a great day to be alive. Rick says he speaks five languages fluently. Well, there you go. I speak one and
kind you know, of, we kind of speak one
and I know Spanish words. That's, you know, that's about
quesadilla does not count for a Spanish word.
What's that?
Quesadilla does not count as Spanish word.
No, it doesn't. I was okay. I was okay with my Spanish long time ago. Not anymore. But that thanks Rick for the clarification. I knew we would get an answer to that question. What a fun day. What a fun day to be there. Tommy, headline-wise, I think we have it here. We can get a little predictive with playoff games tonight in the NBA. You and I are new to this, though, so please nobody like run to the apps and place any wagers. Cavs are favored on the road. The way that series has gone, that's interesting. And then we talked about that Thunder-Denver game. We got the same situation there. Now, that one surprises me a little bit. They're 5.5-point favorites on the road. I would guess, based on what you were saying earlier, that's a Denver spot for you.
Actually, I'm going to go the other way. I think that's an Oklahoma City spot. I mean, I think that when you blow out your opponent the way that they did in game number two, they just need to carry that on. And I think they will. I mean, that doesn't take anything away from Denver, doesn't take anything away from the best player in the league and Nikola Jokic and all of that. But, man, I think that the way that the Thunder were able to respond and get that revenge in game two, I do think they carry that on tonight.
I think I probably agree with you on that. We had a manager firing in Major League Baseball, Derek Shelton, which is interesting. I think Pittsburgh's expectations were a little bit higher. Paul Skeens has kind of struggled in a couple of starts. That's early, though. Well, that's early to fire a manager.
Yeah, but aren't they like 12-26 or something like that? I think that was their record when they let him go.
Yeah, and certainly they thought they'd be better, but I don't know how much better. You kind of need a fall guy. And usually it is the manager to do it in May. I mean, maybe the expectation is that high. You know, but we'll see.
When you've got the reigning rookie of the year and, you know, all the different things that, you know, Paul Skeens has done, and I know he hasn't fully delivered. I mean, yeah, you certainly feel like you've got your anchor in the rotation and you should be better than 12-26, you know, in the early part of May.
It's it's early to me. It's early. But that's fine. Want to mention real quick, Shocker softball fell yesterday in the AAC tournament. That will end their season. I guess it's a disappointing season. But you want to talk about raising the bar and raising expectations? It wasn't a bad season at all. But maybe they didn't reach their own expectation. I fully expect them to retool, reload, and get things locked and loaded in for next year. But that's the end of their year. So that was out there yesterday. They fell to North Texas in that game.
They had to replace a ton of production, you know, and they've had to over the last couple of years. And that's one of the, you know, I guess one of the burdens that's on your shoulder if you're Christy Breadbinner when you've got all of this explosive talent over the last several years, having that consistency where you're not rebuilding, you're reloading every year. And so, yeah, I'm sure by their own expectations, and actually Kevin Saul mentioned this on Wednesday when he joined us, that it was disappointing and they didn't reach the expectations that he felt like they should, both softball and baseball. I know Christy Breadbinner is one of the best coaches in the country. And so being able to attract that top tier talent, they've got the facilities to do so. I fully expect them to be right back in the mix next year.
Yeah, I do too. Rick, ask a quick question going back to the Pirates conversation. How can they win? The Pirates, they spend less money than any other team in the last 20 years. Yeah, they're toward the bottom, but honestly, like, that's not an excuse. The Royals went through this for a long time before the 2014 season, right? How many, it had been 25 years, like, where they were just never good. Right. That's what the Pirates have been going through. But I don't think the spending alone is the excuse there, Rick. I mean, you look at it right now, the A's have spent less than them, are 20-18. We know the Rays historically have been, and they're not great this year, but they've sent teams to the World Series with low payrolls. Cleveland's always good and never spends money. Milwaukee spends money, but not this year, but they still are pretty good. The Royals are bottom 10, and they're obviously really good right now. And I think they're primed to spend more. But there are teams that don't spend a lot of money that win all the time. The Pirates, unfortunately, are one of those teams that it hasn't worked for in a very long time. They do, though. Like, if you were looking at teams, Tommy, that, like, you had to, like, go inherit to turn around, they've got Skeens already. They have one of the best pitching prospects in all of baseball. They have O'Neill Cruz to build around. Like, there are worse foundations to go to than Pittsburgh. So that's what I'm saying. Like, the early firing is interesting, not just because they're bad, but I think their expectations were a lot higher, honestly. Like, they've got some pieces there. And so I think they're telling you. Now, are they going to go in and, like, spend like the Royals have spent? Probably not. They don't need a new ballpark. They don't need all these things. Like, they already have one of the best parks in baseball. So it's a shame that they don't spend more, but I don't think that's the only reason they're not winning. There are plenty of teams that don't spend money that win lots of games.
They've got the foundation. I think you mentioned O'Neill Cruz, who is one of the more exciting players in Major League Baseball. So you've got a young, exciting star in your lineup. You've got a young, exciting star in your rotation. Yeah, they need to fill. And they need to be able to fill the other holes in their lineup and in their rotation, sure, for sure. But there should be, I feel like, a decent amount of optimism surrounding the Pirates. And so, I mean, was there an opportunity for them to have a winning record right now in May or even compete in their division? That might be a little over the top, but at least better than 12-26 or whatever their record is right now. So I'm not overly surprised that they moved away from Derek Shelton, even though it's fairly early in the season. 12-26 is underperforming for sure.
And who knows? Like, baseball manager, like, Derek Shelton's probably not the problem, right? He just, you got to have a fall guy. The problem is organizational. I don't know that there's, and this is a topic for another day as we get into maybe the dog days of the summer. I'm not sure that I would say there is a more emphasized, like, front office than baseball. You know, in football, you can kind of toil around and make a couple of bad decisions, but that really, like, you can get through that in a year or two. In basketball is hard for me to evaluate because I don't quite have the same grasp on why it's so hard for some teams to win continuously when there appears to be, like, the deepest point basketball. But baseball, like, the mistakes you make now in baseball can haunt you for, like, 5 or 6 years. That, like, it's so hard to turn it around in baseball. And I think it's the hardest. All right, everybody. That's it for us on Sports Daily. Been a fun week. We'll see if the Royals can keep the magic going through the weekend. We'll tell you a little bit about the schedule. You've got Shocker Baseball coming 6:15. Coverage begins tonight, 6 o'clock tomorrow, 12:45 for Shocker Baseball on Sunday. The Royals will move to KNSS on Sunday at 11. They actually will be on KFH. There'll be enough time there between Shocker Baseball, so that'll be 6 o'clock on Saturday. That's what we have. We'll come back Monday. We'll talk about all of it. So don't miss it. For Max, for Tommy, happy Mother's Day weekend, everybody. I'm Jacob. We'll see you Monday.